Okay, well, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time out of your quite full schedule to join us for one of these interviews.
You're welcome.
Let me just give you a quick introduction. Amy is a longtime friend of mine who is one of the most dynamic homeopathic speakers that we have. She's a graduate of the National College of Naturopathic Medicine. She is one of the faculty members at the New England School of Homeopathy, where she teaches with her husband, Dr. Paul Herskew. She's also a regular teacher at the National Center of Homeopathy Summer School, and she travels around the world and teaches at various locations and is extremely highly regarded. And if you want more information about her or the New England School of Homeopathy, you can visit their website, www.nesh, that's N-E-S-H, .com. So www.nesh.com. And her husband do produce a wonderful newsletter called the Herskew Letter, which I can't recommend highly enough. It's just a wonderful way to basically learn about homeopathy from its beginnings up onto contemporary ideas, and it's an excellent resource for those of you who would like to understand the cycles and segments model. So, Amy, thank you so much again for joining us on the call.
Thank you.
So, Amy, when we had first talked about doing this interview, you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about the use of homeopathy for pregnant women. And I was curious, is this an area that you really enjoy, treating pregnant women?
It is. I have, this is about my 19th year of practice, so I feel like the longer that I practice, the more very sick people I see in my practice. So to see a pregnant woman who, most women who are pregnant are at least get to the point where they're happy about being pregnant, and it's just a nice balance with a lot of the rest of my practice. I also feel like when a woman is pregnant, it's such an incredible time to treat them because everything is very heightened. They often have very clear physical symptomatology. Their emotions are more on the surface. Certainly their physical general kind of symptoms like food cravings, body temperature, thirst, sleep position, all of these kind of come into full color. And it's actually pretty easy once you understand what's going on to treat women who are pregnant. And the remedies, I think, really act oftentimes quickly and beautifully for their complaints. And I like to think also have a positive impact on the length of the pregnancy, the nature of the labor and delivery, as well as on the baby. So I love treating pregnant women.
Great. You know, I know for a lot of people, Amy, that one of the concerns about giving remedies to pregnant women is that there may be some danger that if they don't know what they're doing, maybe they're going to cause some health issues in the pregnant mother or in the unborn child.
Yeah.
How do you know when and if it's safe to take remedies during pregnancy?
Yeah. I mean, there's like a lot of drugs. Most of them are not tested on pregnant women. I don't think we have very many provings anyway that are intentionally proven just on pregnant women, if any. And mostly, I think this is from our collective experience over the years and over the history of homeopathy, that we have, I don't know of very many cases at all where there have been issues. That's usually what I do tell my patients if they're concerned. And they're often coming to me wanting homeopathy, so they already feel that it's safer than using a drug approach to a problem they might be having. I haven't seen any problems using remedies. You know, the question sometimes will come up, well, what if I take a remedy? Can it cause me to miscarry? You know, certainly women miscarry for all kinds of reasons, and I think if somebody's heading toward a miscarriage, a remedy sometimes can help, sometimes cannot help, depending on what the situation is. But
sure,
we have not really seen it being a problem either to the mother or the baby.
I guess one of the concerns that people have is that even if, as you said, the remedies don't have a negative impact on a woman who's pregnant, that what if she does miscarriage and it just happens to happen or coincide around the time of the remedy? Do you have any thoughts or ideas about that? Because I'm sure that's something that is of concern to some people out there.
Yeah, you know, I don't have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly treat a lot of women in the practice who are struggling with infertility. from lots of different angles. Either they can't get pregnant, or they can't stay pregnant, or they stay pregnant for a while and miscarry, you know, more than several times. And I think it's not that uncommon for many women to miscarry at least once or twice in the course of their life. But for somebody who's really trying for even for that first baby or for that one child, we certainly will work with that person very carefully and keep in very close touch with them. But I haven't had the experience of giving remedies and seeing miscarriages happen.
Mm-hmm. Amy, what about treating the women actually before they conceive? Is this something that you focus on, and do you have any tips about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, women will come to me sometimes wanting that, thinking that maybe that's a good idea. And I have certain women that I, in my practice, that I really encourage to seek homeopathic care before they conceive. And they fall into a couple of different categories. One group of women that I really like to treat beforehand are those that have had challenging pregnancies in the past. They've had pregnancies, they've given birth to live children, but the pregnancies were plagued with either severe or long-lasting morning sickness beyond that first trimester. Pregnancy where there was just extreme fatigue, where they absolutely were unable to work and take care of the rest of the family or household. I love to treat women before they conceive if they have a history of postpartum depression or other emotional issues that seem to have been brought out by the pregnancy. Similarly, women that have had extreme physical kinds of complaints like diabetes of pregnancy or real struggles with varicose veins or constipation.
Mm-hmm.
Even women that have had issues with skin problems, mask of pregnancy, chelasma, or any woman that felt that during a previous pregnancy, whatever chronic disease she might be living with, such as asthma or irritable bowel syndrome or back pain, was exacerbated by the pregnancy, it's very useful to treat them before they conceive, as well as during the pregnancy. And the last group in that category would be women that had very difficult labors and delivery. Even if they're planning now a planned C-section, I still really like to see those women even before they conceive. The other category of women that I really want to get into the office, and sometimes I will be encouraging them because I've been working with their child, is any woman that has given birth to a child that has had problems, whether physical problems like allergies, eczema, digestive problems, or chronic infections, juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, what have you. I really want to see them before they get another pregnancy going. Likewise, if they've had a child that has different sorts of mental, emotional issues, learning problems, sleep problems, any child in the family born on the autistic spectrum, I think it's very useful to give those new babies yet to be formed sort of a head start by treating the mom before she conceives. We also like to treat the dad. People always kind of forget about him out there in the wings.
Don't forget about the dad.
But especially if there's been a problem with the baby, I think it's a good idea to, if possible, you know, you can't always do it, but treat the father before conception.
So, Amy, I'm curious. You give the remedy maybe before the woman conceives. Do you find that they frequently need that same remedy once they become pregnant, or do you find that the remedy changes, or what's your experience with this?
Well, it's actually really an important question to think about in the course of treating pregnant women, because it is a place, I think, where many homeopaths make mistakes where they don't need to. It's similar to the issue of trying to tease out whether a person's situation requires a constitutional remedy at that moment or an acute remedy. Mm-hmm. And I break it down into a couple different ways of seeing things. Basically, you can have a woman that once she conceives will stay in whatever constitutional state she was in before she got pregnant. And it might happen that the pregnancy, it acts as a kind of stress, and so she sort of strains against that with symptoms. She may go further into her constitutional state. So if she has some respiratory kinds of problems, usually it may go into an asthmatic situation. Or if she has some digestive problems, it may go into more intense digestive problems. But what we find is that basically the symptoms that she has are still covered by her original constitutional remedy. And she'll benefit from getting another dose of that remedy, perhaps in a higher potency, depends on sort of where you are in the treatment course. A big hint here is that her mental emotional state will not have changed that much, and her physical general symptoms will have stayed the same. So physical general symptoms being her body temperature, food cravings, thirst, sleep position, things like that. You can see some small shifts in the emotional state. You know, if she tends to be anxious, she'll be more anxious. If she tends to be a little on the downside, she'll be more down. But it's still within the pattern that we recognize of the original constitutional remedy. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times homeopaths will get thrown off because there's some new symptoms. But if there's still symptoms that are covered by the constitutional remedy that had worked well for her before, and her mental state is mostly the same, and her physical generals have not shifted, and the new symptoms are covered by the original remedy, it's very, very easy and useful and effective to stay with that initial constitutional remedy. So, for instance, I had a patient who I had been treating for cystic acne who, prior to pregnancy, who had done very well in the remedy sepia. And when she conceived, she went further into this sepia state with incredible irritability and vaginitis. The acne worsened, but she's still in that sepia state. So I might have wanted to sort of jump ship from the sepia and sure. gone after the vaginitis, you know, so to
right.
speak. But it was important to just sort of stay focused on the fact that she still the symptoms she had were still easily covered by and helped by her constitutional remedy. Yeah.
Do you sometimes see it switching over there to another remedy during the pregnancy?
Yeah, so that's our first category, the person who
yeah.
stays in the constitutional type that they were in to start. The second
yeah.
category would be a person who shifts into a new chronic state. It's a new chronic state for them. It happens along with the remedy. And two things need to happen for me to think that this is what's going on. One is that the old symptoms are gone, or are lessening, you know, in kind of quick order, and new ones have arisen that are not covered by the original constitutional remedy. So you like to see both of those at once before you start thinking about a new remedy. So, for instance, I had a patient who I had treated before she conceived who had had many problems with mentation and anxiety and worry and a very, very serious case of somebody who was deeply impacted by anxiety who did very well on the remedy cannabis indica. And I advised her during, you know, our treatment together, she mentioned she was thinking about getting pregnant. And I kept saying, just wait, you know, there's no rush. Another year would be probably better. Anyway, she conceived a little before she had planned it. And very soon after her pregnancy was sort of confirmed, she was 5 or 6 weeks pregnant, she slipped into a totally different state where her anxiety and fears really lifted, even though she was still working with them through the cannabis. And she developed many physical kind of symptoms unrelated to physical symptoms one would see in cannabis and ultimately did very well with the remedy pulsatilla. So she totally shifted from one state into another, partly from the remedy and partly, I believe, from the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
I had another patient who had done well over the course of several years for digestive complaints and constipation, who had done very well in the remedy lycopodium. And during her pregnancy, the main thing that she came in complaining of was severe and very painful varicose veins, which is a symptom that you'd think, okay, well, that's something in the sphere of influence of lycopodium. But the varicose veins were very severe, and she developed painful hemorrhoids. Usually lycopodium hemorrhoids don't hurt that much.
Mm.
And varicose veins of both the legs and the labia, which is not unheard of with lycopodium, but we needed a remedy that was sort of more geared just toward the veins and covered that. And she lost many of her lycopodium keynotes and wound up doing very well with the remedy Hamamelis.
Mm.
So again, the second category would be somebody who moves away from the remedy they had had before by losing symptoms, losing keynotes, losing physical generals of a constitutional remedy, and moving toward new ones that are not necessarily related to the former remedy.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Amy, you mentioned some of the signs that we're looking for, like a change in the general modalities and so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth. I was curious, what about body temperature? Because it's pretty normal for women during pregnancy to feel much warmer. Is that
mm-hmm.
something you pay a lot of attention to, or
mm-hmm.
is it because of the fact that it's so normal you don't give much consideration? Or?
I don't take much into consideration if it's toward warm. If it's toward
mm-hmm.
very chilly, that would be a big flag for me.
I see.
You can have somebody, like a person who needs remedy calcarea carbonica or Nux vomica during pregnancy, those remedies tend to run on the chilly side, be a little warmer for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would still give the remedy. Sometimes you get a symptom that is so strong and so essential to a remedy that it would push you away from it. But during pregnancy, warmth, same thing like a remedy that you think of as warm in a child. If you think of it as chilly and you see it in a child and they're a little toward warm, you could still prescribe that remedy with good effect.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
That's a good question and important point. Another category that we think about with pregnant women is the woman who is in a true acute state in the pregnancy. The chief
mm-hmm.
complaint itself, the keynotes, the modalities, the mental emotionals, and the physical generals all point to a new remedy different from her constitutional remedy.
Mm.
And this happens just like anybody can develop an acute illness. This can certainly happen to women during pregnancy. We don't. Sometimes somebody will get an acute illness during pregnancy and they will simply need a dose of their constitutional remedy. We know that because the physical generals don't change, the mentals don't change, and the symptoms fall within the sphere of influence of the remedy. But I can remember a patient I had who, constitutional silica, who during pregnancy developed a very bad case of poison ivy, and she needed the remedy Apis. And she had totally different modalities than she would have had with the silica, totally different kind of symptoms than she had with the silica. So in that case, you sort of treat them the same as you would treat anybody with an acute illness.
Sure.
The last category is kind of a special one just for pregnant women, is when you have a sense that perhaps what the mother to be is feeling are actually symptoms of the baby. And it's very interesting when you see this, if you can tease it out and understand it for what it is, what you will see is that all of her chronic symptoms remain. She's kind of the same as she was before. And she also has some unusual, strong symptoms that are not common for her and that are not covered by the remedy that she usually needs. I had a patient once who did very well on the remedy Pulsatilla and became, in the pregnancy, she kind of kept all of her Pulsatilla symptoms, except she started developing all these different kinds of growths here and there. She had a big growth in her nose, she had uterine fibroids, she developed warts, all things that were not usual for her, are not particularly relevant for the remedy Pulsatilla. And I wound up giving her the remedy Thuja. And when her baby was born, it was a little Thuja baby, interestingly enough, with congenital hip dysplasia, kind of a common, something that you see in babies that need Thuja, as well as some other symptoms. And I think what had happened was the Thuja baby was sort of had a very strong imprint on the mom, caused the mom to put out these Thuja-like symptoms, even though she was basically still her old Pulsatilla self. So it's very interesting to see that. I had another case of calcarea mom, kept all her calcarea symptoms and developed terrible, terrible nightmares to the point of night terrors, and wound up giving birth to a stramonium baby. And you could think, well, maybe it was the mother went into a stramonium state for some reason and impacted the baby. But the fact that she had stayed with all of her calcareous symptoms and then in addition had this sort of stramonium overlay, it's very interesting. And, you don't always give that other remedy. Sometimes a mom will come up with a very strong craving, a food craving for, say, lemonade. And maybe it means that she's going to give birth to a baby that is going to go into belladonna acute. The food craving like that, and it's not so serious a kind of pathology or remedy that it's representing, I usually just stick with the original remedy. I don't worry about that little thing. You let the intensity of the symptoms sort of be your guide, whether or not you're going to prescribe for it.
Very interesting. Amy, I've got kind of a two-part question here. Does it happen sometimes that you, in your practice, where you find that the remedy that the mother needed during her pregnancy is also the remedy that the baby needs when it's born? If that's the first part. And then the second part is, if that's true, maybe you don't have that experience, but if it is true, or even if it's not true, when you give the woman for the remedy for the pregnant woman, do you see it sometimes impacting the baby as well?
Yeah, well, it's kind of related to what I was just talking about. A lot of times the babies come out and need the same remedy that the mom needs. A lot of times that happens. I think. It's always hard to know for sure what's impacting what. But what we were always taught, years ago, that if you can't find the remedy for the baby, just treat the mom, and particularly if the baby's nursing, it's going to impact baby as well. Sometimes it's clear that they absolutely do not need the same remedies. Different things comfort them. They need different things when they're upset. They have a totally different temperament, and you can perceive that and observe it and sense it, even from a very, very little newborn baby. Baby's a few months old. There's so much that you can tell through observation. If I am in a situation where I really cannot find the remedy for the baby, I will do that. I'll treat the mom first and see if that doesn't help. More often than not, that has some use. If it doesn't work, then, of course, I'm going to try to find a better remedy for the baby. I think that it brings up the further question of if you have a mom and a dad, and you have a baby, do their constitutional types and the way they are as people, how does that impact the constitutional type of the child? Not so much genetically, but more in terms of parenting and parenting style. Is that going to have an impact on the baby? We know that people with extreme behaviors obviously are going to impact offspring. But even more subtle things. And, I do wind up in my practice spending a fair amount of time doing support work around issues around parenting, especially when there's a child that has behavior problems, overt behavior problems, and early on issues around sleep and control and feeding and control. And there's a lot of problems that arise because the boundaries are not clear, and people overparenting, underparenting, and it's a little bit touchy ground to walk on. You don't want to offend people. I'll always ask, would you open to some advice if I see something blatant? And then the other piece of that is, if you do know your child's constitutional type because you've taken them to a homeopath or because you are a homeopath or whatever, should that impact the way that you parent them? Mm. So it's a little beyond the topic of pregnancy, but certainly related. And, I believe very much that it should. You have that little staphylococcus child. They really don't need to be yelled at. They seldom need to be punished. They're hard enough on themselves. So once you have that information, you can really use it to your advantage as a parent.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And further down the line, you can also figure out, what kind of kid your child should marry, because exactly the kind of person that's going to complement their remedy type. So,
no shermoniums or high slams.
Yeah, you can go ahead and set up your sort of matchmaking business based on remedy types of your kids.
That's great. I love it, Amy. So, listen, what about infertility? Because this is an issue, in the community where you've got some practitioners saying that you can get good results with infertility, and there's other people who claim that homeopathy it's not really an area of strength for homeopathy. Well, what's your experience around infertility?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, it's a very big problem, in our time. Lots of women wanting to get pregnant and unable to either get pregnant or stay pregnant. And there's lots of reasons for it. I think that well, I think women wait too long, a lot of women, so their eggs are just older, and many of them are less viable, so that's a problem. And I think that a lot of women are really stressed out, working too hard, trying to balance everything, the house, the family, the job. That doesn't help. And I imagine that environmental toxins also play a big part in all of this as well. So I'm always happy to try to treat somebody who is working with infertility. I do see that women who have tried many different kinds of approaches that are available to women at this point, sometimes they don't work, and if they take a constitutional homeopathic remedy, those other treatments work better. So if I have somebody on a good remedy, and in general they're doing well, because I do see fertility as a reflection of an overall balance and health for many women, that if they come to me and there's lots of areas where there's room for improvement, and we work together for 4 or 6 months, and we feel like they're in the best shape they could possibly be, that would be a time I would encourage them to go back and try some of the other treatments they tried previously that hadn't worked. That's probably the group that I have the most success with. I must say that I always, when I agree to take on treating a woman when her chief complaint is infertility, I always say that my goal with her is not necessarily that she get and stay pregnant, but that she become as healthy and balanced as she can be. Hopefully that's going to, part of that will lead to her conceiving and being able to carry a child. But I tend with this population of patients to aim low and aim long. I don't like to give false hope. I'm very careful about that. A lot of these people have been struggling for so long that I don't want to be another piece of the disappointment puzzle.
Sure.
So I aim long and I aim low. And I spend a lot of time talking about other issues of their health, because for some of these people, there's no reason why they're not conceiving. For the people when there's a reason they're not conceiving, we try to do whatever we can to help that. First thing we look at, we want to make sure the husband's been checked, of course, because that's easier, cheaper, less invasive. If we know that the man has a low sperm count or the motility, mobility is not up to par, we will ask him to supplement with vitamin C and zinc, because those are known to help increase sperm count and make healthier sperm. And for women who are not getting pregnant, as opposed to women who are miscarrying, we will, if the issue is that she has scarring due to previous infections or from previous surgeries, we'll ask her, this is in addition to homeopathy, to work with bromelain, vitamin C, and vitamin E, all things which are safe to be taking should they conceive, and help to reduce scar tissue if the issue is the plumbing, so to speak. If there's a physiologic kinds of problems, luteal phase defects, hormonal imbalances, issues having to do with her body weight, et cetera, we try to address those directly first and do patient education as much as we can with regard to when they should be having sex, et cetera. If there's another chronic disease that's getting in the way of them getting or staying pregnant, like diabetes or lupus, thyroid conditions, we really try to address those first. So I don't feel like I have any miracles to offer with infertility, but that said, I do have many babies in the practice that were born from women who had been having a difficult time conceiving. I'm not a huge fan of all of the infertility work that's done. I feel like it doesn't come without a cost. And I fear some of the costs down the line for many of these
women. Are you talking about some of the allopathic approaches?
Yes. And I'm a super big fan of adoption. So so many children out there that need loving homes. So,
sure.
That said, I'm happy to treat women who are infertile. I don't like that to be our main focus and goal. I have had some success. I've had some resounding failures, I think, as all homeopaths have.
Amy, I know in general that the way you work is to give the remedy for the person's general chronic state, individually prescribed for each patient. but I'm curious, have you found that there are certain remedies that tend to work more in the sphere of infertility, and or are there certain remedy states that tend to produce infertility more commonly? And if not, that's okay. I'm just curious.
Yeah. You know, I haven't found that. You know, the remedies that come to mind for people, of course, the remedies like sepia and pulsatilla, but I haven't seen that. I think in my practice, I have probably prescribed for infertile women remedies that have a lot more anxiety. And it could just be because I'm living in the Northeast and people are more uptight here. I don't know. It seems like, and a lot of the anxiety around conceiving that just kind of builds and mounts, and every menstrual cycle that comes is this huge disappointment, depression. So I see a lot of these women come in, and in their on the intake form, that what they write is infertility slash anxiety, or infertility slash depression, infertility slash headaches, anxiety. And I do feel that for me, in this state of my practice, a lot of these women, I'm working a lot also with the with helping support the mental and emotional stresses that I think probably go into part of the equation of the infertility, as well as a response to the infertility. You know, there's not a pathology out there that I would routinely say I give this remedy or that. You know that about me. But unlike other homeopaths, I really do find that any pathology can need any remedy, and I just try to find it as I can.
Hello? Amy? Hello? Oh, my God.
Okay. I'll be done in about 20 minutes. I hope I can get back on. Or half at 9 o'clock. Okay.
Hello?
You there?
Hello?
Hi. Sorry, my phone died.
I'm
back. Are you still there?
I'm back, yeah.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Okay, so, I didn't hear the latter part of your answer, but I'll, you were talking about infertility. So I was curious, Amy, is there a time in particular that you encourage pregnant women to seek treatment?
You know, if a woman is doing well on a constitutional remedy, and she doesn't have any major problems in the pregnancy itself, I like to see her about 4 to 6 weeks before her due date.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great time to touch base in terms of any things that may have come up physically or emotionally for her. I will not always give a remedy at that time, but more often than not, I do, because she's either tired or her digestion's a little funky, her skin's acting up, or her back hurts. I usually will, if indicated, give her a dose of generally her constitutional remedy, unless she's bumped into a different remedy as described earlier. If she is having a home birth, I like to look at her birth plan with her. If she's having a hospital birth, you know, I just try to get her talking about the kind of birth experience that she's looking for, and be sure she's got support system that she needs both during and for labor and delivery, as well as afterward. Especially for first-time mothers, I spend a lot of time trying to encourage them to get as much help lined up as they can, to get as much food in the freezer as they can, you know, what kind of things are for her are going to make a difference in terms of support. Because I think that first month or two after a baby's born, especially for a first-time mother, but also for women having subsequent kids, is such an essential time of bonding for the mother and baby that you got to do whatever you can sort of around her to keep the stress level low. And we also know that problems like mastitis, problems with healing from the labor and delivery itself or from a C-section, if that's how it's wound up, are going to be much reduced if she can really, really rest every day for the first 2 or 3 weeks, most of the day. So I'd really try to help her figure out what she needs, get on the phone for her if she doesn't have a lot of support, and help her make the connections that she might need, you know, without intruding. But I think that it's important to do this, and it's very a big part of prevention beyond the remedy for me with my patients. I love treating a woman right after she's had a baby, that first couple of weeks, if she's having problems nursing. I love getting right in there, giving remedies, doing lactation consulting, whatever we can do to help the nursing relationship work, because we know that that's going to be such an essential piece to the health of the baby. And especially if it's a family with a lot of allergies or other kinds of digestive issues, if they can really get the nursing down, it's just going to make a world of difference. So that postpartum period, in terms of homeopathy, it's a very fertile time to use remedies and use the remedies to help support the woman in bonding and having a good early experience with the baby.
Amy, what's your success with treating the postpartum situation, especially the depression that's so common at that time?
Mm-hmm. I think homeopathy is terrific for postpartum depression. You know, we have to look at the three different kinds of postpartum depression. We have baby blues, which 50 or 60% of women experience sometime that first couple of weeks postpartum. It's sort of a mood swings and crying for no reason, and it usually passes, and it doesn't necessarily need to be treated. If I have a woman who's got a lot of support, her mom, or somebody that she gets along with in that kind of role there, I don't necessarily give a remedy. If it lasts beyond that first 2 or 3 weeks, slips into postpartum neurotic depression, and this is something that I will always treat, and it's a serious condition to treat. Women are at risk if they've had it before with a previous pregnancy. There are other risk factors as well. So I always treat that, and I've had very good successes. I think most homeopaths have, and we just treat it like anybody else with depression. There are no special ways of taking the case, but you have to sometimes go to the house, do it, make a house call. At least in my practice. And you need to get those remedies, you need to get them into them soon. I have had a handful of cases over my years of practice of postpartum psychosis where a woman is severely compromised with feelings of suicidal ideation and feelings about hurting the baby. These are cases that really need to be treated under the care of a psychiatrist, and of course the baby can never be left alone with the woman. I think homeopathy is useful in those situations, but it's important to know your limits and to get that woman the kind of support she needs. You know, postpartum depression, there's a lot of stigma around it, and I think a lot of women feel very guilty and very bad, but it's very, very common, and it's common in all cultures all over the world, regardless of socioeconomic, you know, level, race, family structure. It's just a common thing that happens, and the hormones kind of get out of whack. If somebody has a history of depression, it's another risk factor, and we all know, of course, how common that is these days. So it's very treatable. It's very important to treat, because somebody who's depressed is not going to do as good of a job connecting with, bonding with, and caring for a baby. I love treating postpartum depression because it's almost like the woman gives birth again. Once she can come to the baby with pleasure and enjoyment and a little more relaxed and with an open heart, it's as if she's, you know, you're handing her new baby all over.
Oh, what a gift.
It was very rewarding.
Mm.
Yeah.
You mentioned case-taking. Is the case-taking for pregnant women different in any way? Are there any special things that have to be considered in the process?
You know, not especially. You want to be sure you take a full case, get whatever the chief complaint is and all of the modalities from each of the aspects that are bothering her. And you definitely want to do a good, detailed, thorough review of systems, because oftentimes different systems of the body will be impacted during and by a pregnancy. And you want to do that kind of broad, send out that broad net to see what else you might glean in the case. and you want to be sure that you ask all the questions, the physical general questions, because, as I said when we first started talking, a lot of times in pregnancy, those are so heightened that it really can help you especially differentiate among a small group of remedies. You might get down to 4 or 5 remedies in your analysis or your repertorization or even in your pattern recognition if that's how you might be working. And from those 4 or 5 remedies, you can then go to your physical generals and it can really help you to rule in or rule out one or another of the remedies.
Great.
Other than that, I mean, I don't do it any differently than I do a non-pregnant patient, except that I tend to take really as much time as I need to get a good remedy for a couple of different reasons. A lot of pregnant women need more attention. You know, they're a little bit more, not every pregnant woman, but a lot of them, certain remedy types, a little more fragile. You know, they're not getting as much affection and attention as they need or might want. So they need it. And it's also a practice management thing in that if you make a very good connection with a pregnant woman, especially if I'm seeing a woman for the first time and she's pregnant, and that's the first visit, it's an opportunity for them to really experience the beauty and the kind of grace that can occur in a homeopathic interview. And that's something that will bring them back to you if they develop further problems or if the there's an issue with the baby down the line, you know, not a severe issue, something, earaches or something like that. They'll remember you and they'll remember that interaction and that interview and how positive just the interview process itself was. So I always make it a point with my pregnant gals to really, really connect and give them what they need as far as the interpersonal piece of the interview goes.
Interesting. I see we're running out of time, but I did have one other question that I was really curious to have you answer, which is, you know, sometimes a lot of homeopaths have these remedies that they think of that they give, like, you know, right before the labor or right after the labor or during the labor. And I was curious if there's any routine prescriptions that
mm-hmm.
you use.
Mm-hmm. I don't do any of the things beforehand, with the exception, as I said earlier, about giving seeing the woman 4 to 6 weeks before she's due and treating her as needed. It is the one time that I will routinely use arnica, unless there's another remedy indicated, so after a birth. So in other words, if a woman has a vaginal delivery, I will have her partner give her arnica as soon as she's, you know, as soon as she has a baby in arms and is smiling and happy and everything's going well, to take the arnica. It will really help to reduce the swelling in the vaginal area and just help. It is a slightly traumatic experience, no matter how nice a birth is. There's a bit of trauma involved. So I will give her arnica, usually arnica 200 or arnica 1M right after birth. I certainly do that if there's been a C-section as well. When I said that I do that unless there's another remedy indicated, what I meant was if there's anything else that's going on, obviously I would prescribe based on that.
What about some of these other remedies, you know, colophyllum and things like that?
Yeah, I don't use them.
You don't use them?
No, I don't have any experience with them. I will recommend to women at the end of pregnancy to be sure she's continuing to do her duck waddles and her cat-cow yoga positions and her walking, because giving birth is kind of like running a marathon. You have to be in shape, or it's helpful to be in shape. Drinking a lot of water, eating a lot, being sure she's getting enough protein, enough calcium. I'll focus on the things that I know make her healthier. A lot of other homeopaths do work with colophyllum and a handful of other remedies. It's not been my experience, so I can't really speak to it. But I do send women to the hospital with a small kit of remedies that they can have on hand, and they can call me if problems do arise with the labor and delivery. And that kit is really a remedies that I've pulled together specific for that woman. As I know the kind of history and health history that she has, I'll base the 8 or 9 remedies on that. Things related to cramping and uterus not, the os not dilating, remedies related to emotional states I think she might go into. Some of it's kind of guesswork, but it's nice to have that remedy on hand if she needs it. And I'll have the partner call me if they want to check in, or I'll write them sort of detailed notes. If this happens, try this. Now, the remedies are very non-toxic. We don't worry about them, as we said earlier, affecting the mom or baby. And it's nice for them to have something to utilize, to try anyway, before the next medical intervention might be approached.
Hmm. Well, Amy, this was a wonderfully rich call. I mean, lots of very useful information. And I just want to just remind people that if they that Amy is one of the principal instructors at the New England School of Homeopathy, along with her husband, Dr. Paul Hirschew. And if you'd like to get more information about studying with them at their school in Massachusetts, you can visit their website, which is www.nesh, that's Nancy Ellen Sam Harry, NESH.com. So www.nesh.com. And they have, is it a 3-year program that you offer, Amy?
2 years.
3 years, okay. And also, I forgot to mention at the beginning that Amy is the former editor of the New England Journal of Homeopathy. And if anybody wants more information about that journal, they can contact her at NEJH, that's N as in Nancy, E, J as in John, H, at Nesh.com. And also, you might want to check out, when you visit their website, the excellent Hirschew letter, which is a wonderful way to study homeopathy from your home with sample cases, and it's an excellent resource for people who don't have the opportunity to travel and study with them directly. So, Amy, again, I want to really thank you for taking the time. I know you're very busy. Is there any projects or anything that you want to share or, before I unmute them and unmute the other listeners and let them ask some questions?
No, I don't think so. We're just busy working, seeing patients,
okay,
teaching, raising our kids.
Okay. All righty. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, and we'll have some other questions. Hold on.
Okay.
So any questions anybody would like to ask?
Yes, I want to ask one.
Go ahead.
Yes. It's a colicky baby, newborn colicky baby. So do you treat mother or the baby?
Did you hear that, Amy?
You know, I can hardly hear
Krishna,
it.
Krishna, why don't you speak a little bit louder? She said something about colicky babies, but I couldn't hear it.
Yes, colicky babies, you know, newborn colics.
Yeah.
So, do you treat mother or baby?
No, I would treat a newborn baby that had colic. You know, it's not necessarily it's not very difficult to find a good remedy for a super colicky baby. There's not that many remedies that usually come to mind with colic, and I try to take the case. The most important things I look for are, when is the baby worse? What makes the baby feel better, and general temperamental things related to the baby, and things related to the baby's digestion, constipation, difficulty passing stools. Also, of course, want to look at if the baby sweats much, where do they sweat from. The main remedies that come to mind are colocynthis and MagFos. Of course, chamomilla, calcarea, and lycopodium. Those aren't the only remedies, but those are the main ones that we use for colic, especially early on with a baby that's just inconsolable and in a lot of pain.
Hmm. Amy, I'm just curious, as a kind of a quick adjunct, when you give calcarea or lycopodium to these babies, do they tend to be chronically calcarea or lycopodium babies, or can they oftentimes be other remedy states? And
I mean, I'll give you, see them at a year, are they still calcarea?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean? Yeah, they usually are.
They usually are. Okay.
Yep.
All right, good.
One more question.
Another question, go ahead.
Yes. Is the labor, when it's too painful, tardy labor, like the contractions are so painful, and is there anything during labor?
Did you hear that, Amy?
I'm sorry, I didn't. Just
it was
mean
hard to hear. I think the question was, with very difficult labor where the contractions are very painful, are there certain remedies that come to mind? I believe that's the question. Is that great, Krishna?
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh. You know, if the os is not opening, you know, if that's the main problem, the person's not dilating, they're in labor, they're having contractions often, you have to look. A lot of the remedies that are listed in the repertory in the appropriate rubrics are not always that effective. You have to look at the whole state of the woman. You have to take into account her mental state at that moment is, to me, oftentimes the most important thing. And a lot of times it has to do with previous experiences with birth that have been traumatic, or somebody's in the room that they really don't want there, or they're feeling very sad, they want their mother there. You have to ask and you have to look at those kinds of things. If there's a lot of spasming in terms of contractions, but it's not getting anywhere, sometimes we just look at the remedy Simisifuga, Colophyllum. There are entire books written on this subject, and there are homeopath midwives that this is all they do. I've been to several hundred births, mostly as support person, and give homeopathic remedies infrequently at births. I do think that mostly women, you know, are kind of built to give birth, and it will happen eventually. I don't often give remedies. I do a lot more massage and a lot more talking than I do giving remedies. But you have to have patience. If you're going to be at a birth, you have to have patience.
Great. Other questions? Here's your opportunity.
Hi, Amy. This is Dinora.
Hi, Dinora. Yes.
How are you? Okay, I have a question. And the doctor is trying to convince, you know, there is a progressive you probably need. And the woman is asking, you, what would you do? So what do you respond? How do you?
I'm sorry, I could not. Could you?
I didn't hear that. You'll have to speak a little bit louder. There's, unfortunately, there's some background noise, and for us to hear your question, I can't mute everyone else. So if you could just speak a little bit louder.
Okay, the question is, if a woman is in labor and she's being suggested C-section, and she's asking you, is there anything you can offer first?
I think it's really the same answer that I gave to the previous caller, previous question. You have to give a remedy for the whole person at that time, take into account what the labor is like, as well as what their mental state is at the moment, that things that might be holding them back. And sometimes it works beautifully. You give a remedy, and voila, they go from 8 to 10 like that, and they're ready to push. And sometimes it doesn't.
Fair enough. Okay, let's have one last question. We're running short on time.
I've got one about genetic defects in children. There have been some cases of a Down syndrome that have been favorably affected when treated really early after birth. I'm wondering if you have much experience with situations like that, where there was a child who has a frank birth defect.
Yep.
At birth, and then what result was given and what remedies might have been used in different situations.
Yeah, we just had a baby in the practice last week, a two-week-old baby with Down syndrome. Of course, we love to treat these kids, and as most of us know, most Down syndrome kids now are being born to younger women because older women, you know, opt out of having those kids. So this is a very young couple in their early 20s. I don't think that a remedy obviously is going to reverse something like that, but I do think you can help those children with all manner of genetic kinds of issues hopefully have possible life. I have numerous kids in my practice with cystic fibrosis. I think once you help one family, you know, the word gets out. Those are very tight-knit families. And the kids in my practice with CF are just doing phenomenally. You know, they're basically asymptomatic with digestive issues and with respiratory problems. And, of course, that's a genetic disease that has varying degrees of penetrance. Perhaps they were just going to be having mild cases anyway. But the record seems to be pretty good in our favor. We really love treating kids that have genetic kinds of problems because it's interesting to see how far the potential can reach. And we always temper it with a lot of realistic, aiming low, like I said earlier, aiming low and aiming long kind of expectations. We never want to give false hope. We're happy to treat these kids. They're usually brought into us because they have other physical problems that the parents think we can help, allergies, earaches, et cetera, and then voila, all of a sudden these other things that were not thought to be that helpable are being helped, whether it has to do with a kid with CP who's having better bowel control, or a kid that has different kind of seizure disorders from birth having less seizures. It's really very rewarding work, and parents are incredibly thankful for any kind of support they can find. That said, we also have kids that have genetic kind of problems that they die from, that they have very difficult lives that end way too soon, or that live with chronic pain. So certainly no cure-all kind of answers here, but they, you know, you treat them like you treat anybody else. You take a good case, you find out everything you can about them, and you give a remedy based on the whole person.
Right. Okay, well, Amy, we're running out of time, but this was a wonderful call, lots of very valuable information, and hopefully you'll come back and visit us again and do another interview on some other subject. It would be, I'm sure everyone would really appreciate it very much.
Okay.
I just want to thank you, Amy, and I just want to remind everybody again, if you want to find out more about Paul and Amy's school in Massachusetts, they can go to the website www.nesh.com. Or if you want, is there an email address they can send?
Amy@nesh.com.
So amy@nesh.com. I'm going to go ahead and unmute, let everyone thank you personally for what it was a wonderful call. So can everyone say a big thank you to Amy?
Thanks.
Hi, Amy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.